Would I recommend to you, Mr. Chairman, this is Samantha Olson, your staff counsel. I think we need to get a sense from the parties of the length of each presentation, and then you can decide whether we should proceed or take a lunch break.
All right, well, Chair is a bit confused.
I think the Caltrans item may, well, it may take more time than we may want to put in before lunch, and I think perhaps the Bodega Marine Lab permit might take less time. So if we could get a sense from the parties of the timing, I think we might be able to make a better decision.
Well, it's hard to me to judge. I think you're saying Bodega's not going to take.
No, the Caltrans thing, I don't think it's going to take very long.
We don't think Caltrans will take very long.
But if we could find out what the.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, let's ask Caltrans. I understand there are two. We have the enforcement team on Caltrans. We have Caltrans itself and then another contracting party. So I would ask each of them how long of a presentation they need.
All right. Would a representative for contractor, how much time, besides the chair limiting your time, how much?
3 to 5 minutes.
Okay. And the State Department of Transportation.
We would take 5 minutes just for a statement. Thank you.
And Doug Jensen. Be part of that?
Yeah, I concur. 5 minutes is about right, I think, all together.
You encourage us. All right, we'll go to the Caltrans item and see how well we do. And I will begin by reading this statement. And the All right.
Mr. Chairman, if you could hold off for 1 minute while we shuffle around our teams there.
We've got teams moving around on us, but ready to go? All right, this is the time and place for hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adopting order number R1-2008-0008, to consider whether to affirm, reject, or modify a complaint for administrative civil liability in the matter of California Department of Transportation Confusion Hill Bypass Project. This item has been properly noticed. She explained the procedures for this hearing is available at the handout table. Samantha Olson, staff counsel, and David Evans will be assisting the board on this item. Kim Niemeyer is attorney assisting the enforcement team and advises the board on other matters not related to this item. I understand that there are no objections to this arrangement. Is that correct? Okay, will all those expect to give testimony please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter?
Yes.
Thank you. And we will begin with a staff presentation. Ramona.
So, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board, for another 2 minutes. I'm Mona Doherty, a engineer with your staff. Can you hear me okay? Should I have it closer?
Okay. Closer is good.
Okay. Today we're here to consider the administrative civil liability order for the Caltrans Confusion Hill Bypass Project. At this time, I'm entering the file and this presentation into the record. I'm going to try to make this quick. So, the project is located on Highway 101 in Mendocino County, approximately 18 miles south of Garberville. Highway 101 currently crosses an active landslide at Confusion Hill. The purpose of the project is to provide a reliable transportation route around the landslide by relocating the highway from the east side of the South Fork Eel River to the west side. Relocating the highway requires construction of two new bridges crossing the river and a new section of highway. Here in this this one you can see this is the existing road, and this is the project area in the northern section of the slide. This is the Confusion Hill slide. This is the site prior to the project. These are some photos of the project just to give you an idea of what kind of work is taking place. There's both the trestle bridge, and from the trestle bridge, they're building the permanent structures. And here you can see where the trestle bridge is going into the South Fork Eel River. In February 2006, the executive officer issued a water quality certification to Caltrans for this project. Caltrans applied for the water quality certification, and the certification does not identify any specific contractor. It's Caltrans' responsibility to ensure compliance. The water quality certification prohibits discharges of debris, soil, or other earthen material to waters of the United States or where it may be washed by rainfall into waters of the U.S., unless specifically allowed by the certification. In 1999, the State Water Board adopted a National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit for Caltrans stormwater discharges. This is a statewide permit that covers stormwater discharges and prohibits most non-stormwater discharges and is applicable to the project. The project includes drilling and excavation activities that result in turbid wastewater and sediment that is transported from one side of the river to the other through a transport pipe. On May 4, 2007, Caltrans contractor dismantled the transport pipe and pulled it from one side of the river to the other. The pipe was not adequately cleaned or capped, and turbid wastewater discharged to waters of the United States. Caltrans violated conditions of the water quality certification with the discharge of drilling wastewater and sediment to waters of the U.S. and to locations where it could be washed by rainfall into waters of the U.S. Caltrans also violated the stormwater permit, which prohibits unauthorized non-stormwater discharges to waters of the U.S. Caltrans has stated that their contractor is responsible for this discharge. However, Caltrans is responsible for compliance with the water quality certification and stormwater permit. Caltrans failed to comply with all the reporting requirements in the stormwater permit, which includes verbal notification within 5 days and a written report within 30 days of the violation. Staff received verbal notification from Caltrans of the pipeline discharge on May 4th, the same day as the discharge. It was reported that the pipe had not been cleaned, flushed with clean water, nor capped before being pulled to the other side of the river. On the same day, staff began asking for further details of the discharge and the written report. On May 14, 2007, received a fax from the Office of Emergency Service reporting the discharge, and it stated that 170 gallons were discharged to the river. On June 3, 2007, the written report of the discharge was due from Caltrans. Staff had requested the report repeatedly, starting at the date of the discharge and continuing about weekly until the report was submitted. On June 11th, 2007, we received the written report of the discharge. The report stated that 15 to 25 gallons of turbid wastewater and drilling spoils were discharged to the river. Caltrans is responsible for violations of the water quality certification and stormwater permit. California Water Code 13385 gives the board authority to assess civil liabilities $10,000 per day per day of violation. The maximum possible civil liability in this matter is $50,000 for 5 days of violation, 1 day for the discharge, 4 business days for failure to submit the report on time. In assessing administrative civil liabilities, the California Water Code requires the board to take into account the following: the nature, circumstances, extent, and gravity of the violations. The wastewater discharge could have been easily avoided through the use of basic BMPs. The U.S. EPA established a total maximum daily load for the South Fork Eel River in 1999 for sediment and temperature. The TMDL confirmed that discharges of sediment to the river have an adverse effect on the river's beneficial uses. Caltrans states that the sediment from the pipeline was discharged onto the gravel bar and not into the flowing water, but the sediment would have reached the flowing water with rainfall or rising river levels. The South Fork Eel River is habitat for endangered salmonids that are sensitive to sediment discharges. Although Caltrans provided a verbal report of the discharge on the day it occurred, information provided in the verbal notification was brief and incomplete. Staff needed the written report to evaluate the significance of water quality impacts from the pipeline discharge and to initiate enforcement if needed. The reporting schedule in the stormwater permit is generous, given 30 days, but even with that and repeated requests from staff, Caltrans failed to submit the report on time. This prevented our staff from being able to fully investigate the incident. The State Water Board's enforcement policy identifies failure to report on time as a high priority for enforcement. Susceptibility to cleanup or abatement and voluntary cleanup efforts. Cleanup efforts would have abated the discharge, but Caltrans reported that the only cleanup efforts occurred at a location above the floodplain, which is presumably outside of waters of the United States. Ability to pay. Staff understands that the project will cost between $70 and $77 million. The maximum civil liability is small in comparison to the cost of the project. Prior history of violations. Confusion Hill project violations. In October 2006, the executive officer issued Caltrans the first notice of violation for the Confusion Hill bypass project. The violations identified included turbid water discharges to the river, a discharge of concrete wastewater, discharges of welding materials and other debris, and discharges of machinery fluid to waters of the U.S. In November 2006, the Regional Board issued a combined notice of violation and California Water Code Section 13267 order, requiring submittal of a technical report. This second notice of violation included violations such as turbid discharges to the river, failure to report violations, inadequate BMPs to control turbid discharges, and the inappropriate uses of BMPs. An example of this is using a silt fence within the flowing water of the river to control a turbid plume that appeared to be caused by equipment pushing gravel and silt into the river. The violations identified in the November 2006 notice of violation came to staff's attention through reports and photographs provided by Fish and Game. The violations had not been reported to the Regional Board by Caltrans. These are photos submitted by Fish and Game. You can see turbid discharges and here the inappropriate use of a silt fence in the river. The California Water Code Section 13267 order required Caltrans to submit a technical report to the Regional Board regarding these violations and others. The documents submitted in response to the order identified many violations that Caltrans had failed to report to the Regional Board. The types of violations that were not reported included sediment discharges, oil and other machinery fluid discharges, discharges of concrete wastewater, and discharges of welding slag to waters of the U.S. Staff is currently evaluating these additional violations that are not included in this order and is drafting supplementary enforcement actions to address them. These are other relevant violations. In November 2005, the executive officer issued a cleanup and abatement order to Caltrans for the Dry Creek Bridge Replacement Project. Caltrans violated the project's water quality certification by allowing equipment staging, material stockpiles, and refuse disposal within waters of the U.S. without a permit. Staff discovered the violations from a complaint. Caltrans had not reported them. In December 2005, the executive officer issued and Caltrans paid a $101,000 administrative civil liability complaint for violations of the Van Dusen River Bridge replacement water quality certification. The violations were similar to those that have occurred at Confusion Hill and included turbid discharges to the river, inadequate BMPs to protect water quality, leaks and spills of petroleum products within waters of the U.S., and the unauthorized discharge of fill materials and failure to report these violations. In April 2006, before the Confusion Hill bypass project began, the executive officer issued a 13267 order to Caltrans for the disposal of landslide materials into the South Fork Eel River at Confusion Hill. Caltrans failed to apply for a permit or to notify the regional board of the discharges until staff discovered them. Staff received a complaint from a downstream water supply system that water quality monitoring showed high turbidity readings in the river that may have been related to the sag casting activities. Degree of culpability and economic savings. Staff has worked closely with Caltrans on the Confusion Hill Bypass Project to ensure compliance by performing inspection, issuing two notices of violation, and providing guidance for compliance. Caltrans has stated that the contractor is responsible for the discharge. Caltrans, however, is the permittee for the water quality certification and the stormwater permit and must ensure compliance. We cannot issue permits to Caltrans if they are not responsible for permit compliance. Staff contacted Caltrans repeatedly to request submittal of the written report required by the stormwater permit. The violations included in this order were easily avoided through the use of adequate BMPs and timely reporting of the violation. Caltrans has been warned by the two previous notices of violation that many of the BMPs used at Confusion Hill were inadequate and had resulted in violations. Any economic savings resulting from this discharge were small. Staff has expended and continues to expend considerable time attempting to bring this project into compliance. Staff costs for this enforcement action are $7,437. In the administrative civil liability complaint issued in July 2007, the assistant executive officer offered a settlement of $20,000 to Caltrans. The settlement offer included $10,000 for the pipeline discharge and $10,000 for failure to report the violation. Caltrans countered and offered to pay $10,000 for failure to report the violation and requested a public hearing for the pipeline discharge. Staff decided that if the matter was to be heard by the regional board, the entire ACL order should be considered. The terms offered by the assistant executive officer were not separable and required acceptance of all of them. The assistant executive officer determined that Caltrans should not be able to accept portions of the agreement while retaining its ability to challenge those portions of the settlement that were less favorable. Caltrans submitted comments on this matter. One of the issues raised was turbidity monitoring. The discharge report submitted by Caltrans included turbidity monitoring results. Caltrans has clarified in their comments that the turbidity monitoring was performed in two separate locations and could not actually evaluate any impacts resulting from the discharge. It is Caltrans' responsibility to perform the necessary turbidity monitoring when a discharge occurs to evaluate impacts to water quality. Here, that monitoring was not done properly, and the information cannot be used as evidence. The turbidity monitoring results were removed from the ACL order and are not relevant in this matter today. In their comments, Caltrans stated that the turbid wastewater was discharged to the gravel bar and an isolated pool rather than the flowing water of the South Fork Eel River, as the river was in a low flow period. This is not an important distinction. The gravel bar and an isolated pool are below the ordinary high water mark of the South Fork Eel River and are therefore waters of the United States. The water quality certification and stormwater permit prohibit the discharge of unauthorized waste to waters of the U.S. Additionally, in their comments, Caltrans stated that the discharge was not cleaned up except for in an area above the floodplain, which is presumably outside of waters of the U.S. The discharge, therefore, was washed by rainfall into the flowing water of the river or captured by rising water levels during the next rain event. Not only will discharges to the isolated pool eventually make it to the flowing water, but the isolated pool itself has beneficial uses that must be protected. Fish and Game identified the isolated pool as containing fish and amphibians, including a sighting of a California red-legged frog, an endangered amphibian. In summation, Caltrans violated the water quality certification and stormwater permit. Staff recommends that the board affirm the ACL order. The maximum penalty that could be imposed be $50,000 for 5 days of violation, one for the discharge, four for failure to report on time. Thank you. Are there any questions at this time?
I just had one for either legal staff or, and if you want more time to answer, but on page 4 of the objections by Caltrans, they note that they thought the original notice was confined to a timely written report, and that when the item was noticed here today, it was deficient, confusing, and conflicting. Were additional problems with the report. Do you believe that was properly noticed and before here, and do you believe they had adequate time to respond?
We have in front of us a late submittal from Caltrans. The chair has made it available to board members. It made the chair's intention to hear from Caltrans and have them walk us through it. I have not yet completed my first read of it. But in the interest of trying to get to a decision today, questions Ms. Korb is asking are good ones. I just want to preface it with them explaining their document to us before we have an explanation of it. So,
and I confess, I thought it was in the hearing record, and if it isn't, then I will wait till there's a ruling by the chair on that issue.
Pass it out so board members can have it, not just get it while you're sitting here. But on the other hand, it did come in late, and that sets up certain special requirements. So. All right, we'll come back to that. That's a good question, appropriate, just at the right time. We'll wade into it.
Yeah, we would like to answer that question at the appropriate time. Thank you.
Okay, anybody else to staff at this point?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to add a few comments. David Leland, Chief of your Watershed Protection Division. I just wanted to step back and offer something of an overview of what our hoped-for relationship in the long term with Caltrans is as a perspective on this particular issue. We have a vision of Caltrans construction operation, if you will, that integrates water quality protection into all of their processes from the permit development all the way through post-construction maintenance and monitoring. We know that the permit development process affects the design of these projects. There are adjustments that are made during that process. The completed permit is a part of the project, and it constitutes, in our view, a commitment on Caltrans' part to implement the water quality protections that are included in those permits, the stormwater permit and the 401 certifications. There are a variety of examples that I could offer on how that can be accomplished. Coordination of Caltrans permitting and construction staff is one example of that, including the water quality protection permits as part of the bid documents so that all the bidders know what is expected of them and have the same information when they're bidding a project, just as they do for steel and concrete. This really is that's another kind of specification for a project. Including the permits and the permit compliance into contract so that the contractor is fully aware at the beginning of what they're accountable for. Good monitoring, good reporting, effective oversight in the field on Caltrans' part of their contractor, and accountability of the contractor to Caltrans and of Caltrans to us for water quality protection. These are all basic environmental management tools which taken together lead to a connected, integrated environmental management approach to doing their projects. The matter before you today is an example of a breakdown in that continuum where the dots have not been connected. We're working so that will not be the case in the future. Some specifics on that. Let me take the opportunity now to introduce Jeremiah Puget, who has been hired through a contract arrangement between among Caltrans, ABAG, and the regional board. He's being funded by Caltrans to work on development of Caltrans permits. Jeremiah, maybe you could stand up for a second just so everybody knows who you are. He's wading into it, and we're off to a good start with that. We've also been continue to modify our 401 certifications and the language in that to try to, as we've identified some of these breakdowns, to try to get language into the certification that will connect the dots better. And along those lines, we have included as a cert condition that the permits be included in the bid documents and the permit compliance be an element in the contract. We're working with Caltrans to better communicate water quality protection regulations and what our expectations are relative to that. We've conditioned the 401 certs to require Caltrans to have regular meetings on environmental compliance in the field as projects are underway. And we're working on prioritizing inspections. So we have a lot of initiatives underway here with them and look forward to a good system in place as we move down the road. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Massey.
Mr. Leland, the young man who has been hired and has been hired or is being paid by Caltrans, obviously there's some concern on their part. What is his function? What does he do?
Well, his role will be he will be dedicated to permit development for Caltrans projects.
But working as a regional board.
He's an ABAG employee, so he works in our office under our direction. Caltrans has funded that position through a contract that already exists with ABAG. Region 2 has had a similar relationship in place for a number of years now, so we're modeling our relationship off of something that both Caltrans and a regional board have experience with and that has been successful in Region 2.
Okay, so his function is to essentially liaison our requirements with Caltrans' needs for construction.
That's right.
And it's being funded out of the Caltrans budget.
That's right.
Thank you.
All right, and I would just, the item before us is the ACL, and it appears in our documentation as, I don't know how many pages long we're up to, page 11. So we just encourage anyone who does address us to try to focus in on that, because that's the action we're going to be taking here today, I hope. Promise to be short. I remember that part. Evan Payne, MCM Construction, followed by Arpeen Sazeron. Ardeen.
Hello, and thank you for letting me speak. My name is Evan Payne. I'm with the project manager for MCM Construction on the Confusion Hill Bridge project. I'd like to clarify some of the facts that they on the previous deal, that the was not 170 gallons of water. This was a 2-inch pipeline, and even if the pipeline was 1,000 feet long, that's still only about 13 gallons of water. So we guesstimated it. We erred on the conservative side of somewhere between 15 and 25 gallons. This system in itself was a BMP. This system was used for the construction of the Pier 2 footing, which is immediately above the river. And I'd like to add that most of that work was constructed during the winter time. And during that whole operation, there was no discharges whatsoever. And this event unfortunately happened when we were dismantling this BMP. The BMP was drilling the foundation for the columns, which is about 11 piles, 5-foot diameter, exceeding 100 feet deep. We're talking about several hundred cubic yards of concrete. Actually, it's more like a couple thousand cubic yards of concrete in this vicinity right here. And the drilling water was put into a Baker tank, which allowed most of the sediments to settle out. And then this water line here transported the water from the high side of the river at Pier 2 to the north side of the river via gravity flow to another sediment basin, which allowed even more of the sediments to settle out. And the system worked beautifully. There was no discharges. Like I said before, this was as the system was being dismantled, as they were dismantling it, they blew the water line from the high side, tried to blow all the water, everything out of the line. Unfortunately, there was a belly in the system, and as they were pulling it down to the low side, the top of the pipe got to the low point in the system, and it dribbled out some of the water across the river bar, which is the pictures that you've seen in the report. That material was ground up rock, basically suspended in water. It did not get in the river in the flowing water. It landed on the river bar. Presumably a portion of it landed in the pond that was on the north side of the river. However, we did do turbidity readings as soon as this happened, and the turbidity readings in the river showed no increase in turbidity. In addition, we also did turbidity readings in the pond itself, which showed a higher level of turbidity, and I think that's where the confusion came from on this whole event, is that we did a set of reports from the flowing river, and we did a set of reports from the, I'm going to call it the pond, and the two values were compared to each other. The pond was isolated from the river. It has a naturally higher turbidity. It has a algae and whatever, and you can look at previous pictures prior to this event, and you can see that the pond has a deeper color, more brown color. It's just naturally more turbid. And so the initial turbidity report showed that there was actually zero increase in turbidity, which makes sense because none of the water landed in the river. Now, out of the water board permit for this project, it specifically states that, in fact, I'm going to go ahead and read it so I get it right. Turbidity monitoring results shall be reported to an appropriate regional water board staff by telephone within 1 hour of taking any turbidity measurement that shows turbidity levels are 20% above background, 100 feet or more downstream of the source of turbidity. In this case, there was zero increase in turbidity, not even close to 20%, and it was only 50 feet downstream from the incident, not 100. So per that permit, technically this event didn't even need to be reported. Now, this project it's a high activity project. It's highly funded, and it's, I think, under more scrutiny than the average day-to-day operations. And because of that, Caltrans and MCM, in an effort to try to abide by all these permits, I'm gonna use the word scared stiff to make sure that everything is reported on the project, not even things that aren't necessarily required to be reported. And so here's something where this incident that did not cause a turbidity in the river, that did not increase the turbidity, was reported to the water board, and apparently the results were confusing or whatever, which I think could have been solved with a couple of phone calls rather than $7,000 or $8,000 worth of whatever that money was spent on to explain the event. And it's kind of frustrating because there is an enormous amount of money and time spent to try to abide by these permits. In fact, I was also involved in the Van Dusen project that they mentioned in this display up here. And I expected that we spent approximately 10% or more of the original contract value on that project directly dealing with sweepy issues. And that project was over $13 million, so it was probably more in excess of $1 million was spent at Van Dusen trying to keep the water clean. Confusion Hill, we're headed down the same road. It's this project, $65 million, and there is a massive amount of energy, effort, time, staff spent on trying to maintain all of these issues. So here we're talking about an incident that was 20 gallons. To put that in perspective, that fills an average bathtub about 4 inches of some material that landed on the dry river bar that they make the presumptions that it's going to make the water more turbid when the water rises. Well, I also say that when the water rises, you will not notice an increase in turbidity for that instance either, because when the water does rise, it's going to be naturally more turbid. So if you do the reporting requirements as stated in the permits, you're not going to see an increase in turbidity even then, because the amount of this discharge was just minute. It's unfortunate. It was a great BMP system. It did what it was supposed to do, and a little bit failed out when we were taking it apart. That's all I wanted to say.
Any questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. One question here, and maybe it's just I need to compare some apples and apples, but you said that no water was discharged into the river, but in the staff's presentation, we saw a photograph looking top down from the bridge into the water of a plume of turbidity moving downstream. Maybe you can clarify that.
That is a separate event. That,
okay.
is not what this
okay.
Particular administration is for.
Okay. And then secondly, and this may be more geared toward Caltrans than for MCM, but there was notification that a discharge had occurred, that it actually did occur the same day that it had happened. And so one of the issues that's being brought up is that there was a 30-day reporting period to sort of memorialize that had happened formally per the terms of the permit, but part of the fine that's being considered here is based on the fact that it, you know, there was a 30-day window for that to happen, and it went beyond that 30-day window, irrespective of, you know, volumes or where it was discharged. So, you know, per the permit conditions, that's an issue.
Per the permit conditions, we filled out a discharge report the day it happened, and we notified Caltrans, and we were told that Caltrans verbally notified the agencies. So as far as that goes, MCM did everything we're supposed to do. And I'd also like to add, because they said that the MCM did not clean up the discharge, we were directed not to clean up the discharge. I've got letters. One letter said that we were directed to clean it up. We were supposed to scoop it up, and we were supposed to do it the following Monday. About an hour later, I got another letter from Caltrans that said that the Fish and Game said that, no, you can't go out there and clean it up. You have to polish it with rags and put it in 5-gallon buckets. So I have a letter from Caltrans saying the direction is unclear, is inconsistent, so do not do anything until further notice. And I followed up with my own letter saying the same thing. Your direction is very unclear. At the time this happened was a period when we were not allowed below the 100-year, and I wasn't about to go down in there and clean up something without a concurrence from everybody that what we needed to do. I mean, it would just open up another can of worms. So therefore, it did not get cleaned up. It sat there, and but again, it's less than 20 gallons of material on of ground up rock on a rocky river bar.
Okay. Thank you. And Ardeen or Doug, whichever one go first or together.
Mr. Chair, this is Samantha Olson.
Ms. Olson.
Can you swear in these witnesses? I'm not sure they take the oath.
We're not giving testimony as evidence. We're doing our summation, but we'll take the oath if that's...
Yes, this would be considered testimony,
okay.
So if you don't...
To repeat, if you expect to give, if you're giving testimony in this matter, please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. And again, you're welcome to make whatever statement, but I have accepted your letter. It is a late submittal. We have not been able to decipher it ahead of time, so anything you need want us to gain from it, you should point us to during your comments.
We apologize that it is considered late. We just received the agenda package on Monday, which triggered the need, we felt, to file some written objections to some of the matters in the package. So we apologize for any inconvenience. As we saw during the PowerPoint presentation, this project is very large in scope, even on a statewide basis. This is a large and challenging project adjacent to the spectacular wild and scenic Eel River with its fish and other critters, the plant life, the trees, the rugged rock, steep slopes leading all around it. It's a very good-sized project. The state takes its permitting responsibilities very seriously here. After we received the administrative liability complaint, we proffered the $10,000 to settle out the reporting side of the claim. And one of our representatives made contact with MCM and asked if they would reimburse the state were we to settle out the $10,000 for the actual discharge, and the answer was no. The Department of Transportation has a responsibility not only as a permittee, but also as the responsible holder of public funds, public gas tax money. We realize that based on past experiences that were we to settle the entire matter without agreement with the contractor that they would contribute to the discharge portion, that we would be unlikely to recoup those funds. So that is why we attempted to settle the matter separately. I'm not aware of any legal ban against separately settling the matter. Correspondence went back and forth between our office and staff of the Water Board. Our efforts have been so diligent that this check has traveled with me today. I have the settlement check. If anybody, I've never had such a difficult time trying to tender funds. I would also add, I don't know if I need to reiterate our objections to matter that exceeded the scope of the administrative liability complaint. Is the written objection sufficient? Sounds like there were some questions, but do I need to restate the objection verbally?
Is it contained in the letter we received today?
Yes, it is.
I believe you've been informed that you should explain your letter to us today.
All right.
Anything that we should gain from it?
Well, most of my letter, I think I've already paraphrased with respect to the our attempts, are somewhat of a dilemma that we find ourselves in with respect to trying to ensure as best as we can that we can recoup any fines paid for the discharge from the contractor. As to the objections, the administrative liability complaint addressed the tardiness of the written report 4 days late. Our report was at that point in time, there was, as the staff knows, significant changes in personnel going on in the project. Nonetheless, we were late. The lateness was what was addressed in the ACL. Then recently there was the summary, the executive officer summary, executive, what is it called? The summary report, as well as the proposed order, which contained matter addressing the actual contents, the substance of the report, and asserted or basically contained conclusions that the substance of the report
was deficient. That was an allegation that we believe is material, that was not contained in the four corners of the complaint, and which we were not able to prepare an adequate response to, because we would have.
May I ask a question to you, Mr. Chairman?
Can
you please point to the specific language in the ACL and the agenda package that was changed from the complaint for us?
Let's see. Paragraph 10 of the proposed order refers to conflicting or conflicts in the reports. The first sentence, conflicting and confusing reports. And there's something else here.
Do we have in our agenda package the original complaint? I'm sure we're gonna want more questions from enforcement staff, but just.
And then also in the executive officer summary report, it refers to conflicting and confusing reports on the pipeline discharge.
On page 3.
Yes, page 3, and then also in the summary report on page 2, there's a reference to the written notice. It says the written notice did not include adequate information to assess the water quality impacts of the pipeline discharge. To the extent that any order forthcoming from this board will contain reference to the late report, we would object to any further inclusion of data regarding the report or any complaints regarding the report as to any inadequacy or other flaws in its actual contents, with respect to being potentially conflicting or incomplete, because we were not given notice that that was a problem.
Mr. Chairman, I don't advise that you rule on whether you want to accept the late report into the record until you've heard from the enforcement team. Just that is up to the discretion of the board, but I would want to hear from the enforcement team before making that determination.
One thing I would add about the additional allegations that appeared in the proposed order is that we weren't really given any basis to assess whether or not the written report was contradictory or contrary to other reports or inadequate. Those are just conclusions. If there was some guidance given as to how it was inadequate or what it was contrary to, that would certainly make it easier to respond to those allegations.
If I may ask, when did you first learn of those, as you call them, allegations?
I believe we received the agenda package on Monday of this week.
I'll have questions then of staff as to the timing of that. I think I received my agenda package about 12 days ago. All right.
If I could point out one other thing. In regards to the failure to submit a timely written report, there are some circumstances which I believe mitigate that failure, and those specifically are, and this was noted in the initial presentation today, but the department, Caltrans, did submit an oral report on the day of the accident. And also, we acknowledged early on that we had failed to submit a timely written report, and that was why we attempted to settle out that portion of the proposed liability. And finally, the failure to submit a timely written report was not an attempt by the department to obscure the facts or to mislead board staff in any way. It was genuinely an oversight, and it was a mistake, nothing more. And as our dean pointed out, that was due in part to the fact that we are making some significant staff changes at that project, and those were part of our efforts to better respond to concerns of the Water Board.
So, if I may, in terms of what you've just stated, then, is that the difficulty you had filing a timely report was then due to Caltrans staffing changes and issues?
Yes, that was an aspect of it.
And as I understand, what you've stated is that you're willing to accept that the reports were late.
Yes.
That is correct.
The written report.
Yes.
We did make an oral report the day of the accident.
Ms. Olson.
Does Caltrans concede then that a discharge occurred?
I believe our position on that is that we are not in the best position to address that. MCM was in control of the events surrounding the discharge, the alleged discharge, and they seem to have acknowledged that there was a discharge of some kind today. So with that in mind, Caltrans certainly acknowledges that.
And are you...
And just one last point. There was a... Ms. Doherty made the comment that it was Caltrans' position that it was not... the discharge was not our responsibility, and that's not really our position. I think that we would acknowledge that, per the permit, we have a legal responsibility for any discharge. Our position is that we were not in control of the discharge, and we are not in the best position to describe the events leading up to the discharge or immediately thereafter.
But you are the permit holder?
That's right.
And given our contractual relationship with MCM, where they control and direct the work, and there is a fine, it is our position that the state should be reimbursed for that from MCM. But again, based on past experiences where we too have voluntarily, in advance of the hearing, settle it out, MCM may likely have been disinclined to reimburse us without formal costly claims litigation.
Is that part of your contract with MCM? Is that if, as the contractor, do you transfer responsibility of permit compliance to MCM?
No, I think that I have not looked specifically at the contract for that particular, but we are, as the permittee, we do have primary responsibility. Mm-hmm. The contractor is under the contract. They are responsible for knowing the permits and complying as well.
But to play back, if I understood your words correctly, if we, based upon the evidence, were to decide to issue a civil liability fine, the contractor would have to pay it, but if you volunteered to settle and they have not specifically agreed, they could say, no, that's your problem because you volunteered to settle.
Is that correct? That has been their position in the past. Legally, I don't know if that's correct or not, but that MCM did want their day in court today, so to speak.
Yes, thank you.
Ms. Harris.
This sounds like a big bucket of misunderstandings if you ask me personally. but it's in accordance with MCM's testimony, his understanding was that it was a non-event based off of the turbidity testing that was done at 50 feet below the site versus the 100 feet that's required in the permit. So maybe I shouldn't be asking him that when he's not up here, but I feel like there's these big black holes between MCM, Caltrans, and then our staff. It just seems like there's a couple big missed spots. So maybe someone can help me understand the flow of this situation in regards to how we're going to work it out.
Board Member Harris, this is your staff counsel, Samantha Olson. I just want to be clear that the violation that staff is suggesting is not based on any measure of increased turbidity. It's just the discharge itself.
The discharge itself and the delay in the written reports.
Right. There are two elements. The turbidity would go to one of your factors in considering how much of a fine to levy, and that would be the harm, and whether it could be prevented, those kinds of factors. And so that's why that evidence is before you.
Okay, so I'm struggling with the, in order for there to be an event, there has to be a discharge with a turbidity level past, no. So, okay, I'm confused then.
Just a discharge.
Just a discharge.
The permit itself prohibits that discharge to waters of the state or areas that could eventually flow to waters of the state. And okay. That's all they need to prove to show the violation.
Okay, I had a confusion there. Sorry.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Massey.
Could I ask Mr. Leland to, as the head of our enforcement, if you would refresh me a little bit, particularly on the PowerPoint on page 8, the enforcement policy of the failure to report has a high priority, both as to why that has a high priority and its application around the state. And I would pick on Ms. Doherty, but I think she'd grab you anyway.
I'm going to help him by providing some of the agenda item that addresses this.
I can speak to the first and probably not to the second. The enforcement policy includes reporting as a high priority because that's a key element in the process of us learning and being able to react to events that happen that constitute water quality violations. It's fundamental to our process. Every permit that we have, I believe anyway, has a reporting requirement in it where a discharger provides us with information on how they're performing against the conditions of their permit. I guess perhaps I can make some informed speculation about how that is done around the state, because all of the NPDES permits and related actions like that have those same kind of requirements in them. So it's widely applied.
Excuse me, it's not only widely applied, but it is more than common practice to absolutely adhere to these. The violation itself is simply the violation, and the absence of adhering to that policy would create a problem as a precedent. And then we're arguing about 3 days or 4 days or 5 days or a month or...
We are not in a position to provide any kind of a response or input or reaction or counsel or whatever on a violation if we don't even know that it happened or if we don't have the facts in hand about what happened. There can't be any adjustment, any conversation, any fix from our perspective without having information in hand. That's what reporting does, is it provides us with that mechanism to be able to understand what happened.
Ms. Niemeyer.
One other small point, too, is in the context of Caltrans, Caltrans benefits in their permits with us by the fact that they're a sister agency, and we have developed, you know, a stormwater permit that's specifically for their activities. There's, you know, as you know now, someone specifically working on 401 certifications for them, so it's really fundamental to our process with Caltrans that we have in place an understanding of when and how reporting is done. So it's very, very important in this context.
And if I may ask, Mr. Leland, what I heard you say was it's the timeliness of the reporting that's critical.
Yes, that's right. Timeliness and information, too. I mean, accuracy and completeness and timeliness.
All right.
Mr. Chair, since the enforcement team's there and available, can we ask them to explain procedurally what happened from the complaint to any changes in the ACL that you have in front of you and how that happened? And just to clarify the procedure, and that will go to your determination about whether to accept this late submittal.
Right. And
Hi.
Let me give a little background on what happened here. So when we received the notice of the discharge that we're alleging was 4 business days late, it included some turbidity monitoring results, which they were in a confusing manner. So I put them into the ACL complaint that originally went out, not as proof of the incident, because we already knew the incident occurred, but as just some background on some of the evaluation of the incident. We didn't find out until Caltrans submitted their comments in October on the complaint that I had misinterpreted from the notice of discharge. So when they submitted comments, I just responded in the EOSR about why there had been some confusion. They were not penalized in any way for the fact that their report was confusing in this manner. The ACL order was not changed from the ACL complaint. It was just discussed in the ACL, in the EOSR, and they were not penalized in any way. It was just, in responding to their comments, I wanted to tell them why I had included the turbidity monitoring results, but then when I learned that they were not done in a way that would help kind of define what happened, I removed them.
And for clarification, there is no penalty for the report being confusing. It's only for a lateness. So that's not a part of the penalty today.
We have as attachment 8 in our package, the white sheets following some purple sheet. A letter dated October 25th from Department of Transportation, Caltrans. And apparently it's responding to an earlier notice of this item. But my question is to the second and third page of that document, if those are parts of the letter from Caltrans and are there Caltrans comments, it's not noted at the top nor bottom, and I'm just making sure that those
yes, those are. Those were attachments. So when you're referring to the October 25th letter, and then there's an October 16th MCM letter. Is that what you're referring to?
Attachment 8.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was an attachment to the Caltrans letter of October 25th.
That was actually an attachment to the EOSR. It was an attachment 8 comment letter from Caltrans. And it included their comment letters.
Yeah. All right,
I'm sorry, do I need to clarify more?
I don't know.
I'm clear. You're,
okay.
Now, I want to have you step aside once I bring back Evan Payne, MCM, to respond to a question. What would you like to tell the board?
I would like to read some more out of your permit to Caltrans that Caltrans has obtained. Specifically about the discharge itself.
And again, just reinforce what you're reading from.
This is the issuance of Clean Water Act Section 401 certification for the Confusion Hill Bypass Project. It's the actual permit, the Water Board permit to Caltrans. And it says for under monitoring activities, Item 19 says, whenever turbidity in the South Fork River is increased above background as a result of project activities, turbidity measurements shall be collected upstream, downstream, so on and so forth. Well, there was no increase in turbidity. The material never hit the water and landed on the dry river bar. And some of the problems that I've come up against is, what do we consider waters of the state? And some inspectors and so forth have even go far as to say is if you have a discharge on top of this roof and it goes down the rain spout into a gutter and over the water treatment center, that eventually ends up in the waters of the state, and therefore it's waters of the state. And in this case, it landed on the dry riverbed. And I'd also like to point out that in this same permit, it says all permanent and temporary impacts to waters of the United States from this project will occur within two designated 1.5-acre areas. The area of anticipated temporary impacts to waters in the United States from access road and temporary bridge placement and removal activities will be approximately 0.16 acres at each end of the project. This permit says there will be some temporary impacts to this area. It even goes so far as to designate where and to how much area. And this activity was exactly in one of these areas. So it's not like you could build this project, which has an excess of 10,000 yards of concrete. We're moving close to 400,000 yards of dirt, that we can think that we can possibly do all this without having any kind of impact whatsoever to the river. It's just, you can't do it. And I'm frankly a little bit disgusted that this little event has made it this far. It's ridiculous. And I agree with your statement that there is definitely some black holes and a definite communication problem.
Okay. All right. Mr. Messing.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Ms. Doherty, would you clarify for me that this is a problem of a discharge and not a problem of turbidity?
Yes. In the ACL order, I included the condition that was violated. Should I read it? It just says that no debris, soil, silt, sand, bark, goes on to list a lot of things that are not allowed to be discharged to waters of the state unless authorized by the permit. The permit is written based on project activities, but that doesn't allow for any kind of, you know, failure to use BMPs yes. to result in additional discharges.
I'd also note that section that she's talking about, this is on page 3 of the ACL order. So, and this is, it's additional condition number 9, so it talks about no debris, soil, silt, sand, bark, slash, et cetera, or other organic or earthen material from any construction or associated activity of whatever nature, other than that authorized by this permit, shall be allowed to enter into or be placed where it may be washed by rainfall into the waters of the state. So something that does get confusing, and I think this is kind of the heart of where we're at today with Caltrans, what we're trying to work on with Caltrans, is that there's a stormwater permit that has certain requirements, one of which Caltrans is supposed to set out those things that they're going to notify us about. One of them is violations of the 401 cert. There's a lot of different permitting requirements that are statewide that sort of overlap, and it's understandable that MCM Construction has some confusion about what those requirements are. And it's really difficult, since we're the ones that work with Caltrans, for us to also help the contractors understand what those requirements are. And that's Caltrans' responsibility. And it is unfortunate that this is a small spill. You know, at one point it was reported to us by the Office of Emergency Services that it was over 170 gallons. And I think you can see also in the comments of Caltrans' letter, it's on the October 16th letter from MCM, Karen Splytoff, I may be saying that wrong, from Caltrans called. She was upset. She apprised me that there had been a major spill on the river. So a lot of different information, and this is kind of what the heart of what we're getting to, and in part why this was brought to you.
One question I have, or maybe some clarification. As was mentioned, in the permit, they're mentioning there will be some impact in a construction project of this sort. It doesn't read that there will be impacts excluding BMPs. This may be a different issue, wouldn't it? If the similar spill had occurred, had the best management practices been in place, and an accident beyond anybody's control had happened, might it be a different issue?
I think it would have less priority for enforcement if it was a purely unavoidable incident.
That's my point, is the best management practice is a key issue.
And I think that's sort of a key issue here, is that this was very, very easily avoidable.
I just wanted to address one thing. Accurate and timely self-reporting is really the backbone of the programs that we work on. We don't have enough staff to be out at all the sites when anything could occur. So what really became hard for staff to do is we had a lot of different reports from Caltrans, from the Office of Emergency Services, that were very conflicting. So we tried to make the best we could, and we actually didn't get a full account from Caltrans on what actually occurred until they responded to our initial administrative civil liability complaint, because the initial discharge did not include a lot of notice of discharge, did not include a lot of the information that was then provided to us after we had already issued the original complaint. So it took actually us issuing a complaint to get the full information we needed to be able to evaluate what occurred.
To that point, do we have a copy of what was submitted on June 11th?
Yes, we do. It's attached, let me get there, it's attached to the USR. It is attachment 4. Attachment K, notice of discharge submitted by Caltrans on June 11th.
It's one of the white pages.
And, yeah, and reviewing that earlier, and the notes at the bottom, facts 5-7 and received 5-0-7, those are, do we know that, what those signify, who stamped those?
I believe that's, are you talking about the date it was faxed, stamped at the bottom? I believe that was the day that the contractor faxed it to Caltrans, but I don't have any direct knowledge of that.
And if I may ask the Caltrans folks back to the table, the recipient of what we're calling attachment 4, the title attachment K, the letter we were just looking at, is to Ron Den Hare. And I'm also noting the same name appears in attachment 8, which were the October 16th letter from MCM Construction that was, as I take it, appended to the October 25th Caltrans letter. So.
Mr. Den Hare was the resident engineer for Caltrans, who is no longer the resident engineer.
And you, in your October letter, did you deal with the fact that he had instructed the contractor to do nothing until further notice?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
It states in the October 16th submittal from MCM that the end of the first paragraph, second to last sentence, and I will read it. We had a short conversation about how to correct the situation, and I was instructed by Ron Den Hare to do nothing until further notice from Caltrans. Just curious, I don't see any description of instructions given in the October 25th letter or how you dealt with a guy from Caltrans on site telling them to do nothing until further notice on the day of the event, and at what point, you know, we get a submittal that was faxed to Ron Den Hare by the contractor on May 7th, but we received it on June 11th. Walk me through those steps.
The instruction not to do anything was something I was not, we were not anticipating to address today, but you know, to the extent I can repeat third hand.
It was earlier stated that that was appended to a letter received from Caltrans in October to us. Is that correct?
That's that is, in a letter from MCM, but I think Mr. Payne also indicated during his statement that the beginning of that chain of instructing not to do something started with Fish and Game. And so I don't know the entire chain of events. We'd have to get more witnesses here that we were not anticipating to address this particular issue. But, you know, my understanding, again, this is second or third hand hearsay, was that Fish and Game wanted the rocks to be cleaned by hand, and that
Mr. Chairman, I have the letters right here. I can read it to you.
Please proceed.
Okay. So with respect to attachment K, it's my understanding that MCM submitted the report to Mr. Den Hare on or about May 4th, 2007, and that the attachment K was inadvertently not submitted to the board thereafter until June of 2007.
All right. Okay. Thank you. I will come back to our counsel's comment earlier about submitting the letter from that we received today and earlier indicated openness to do that, but at this point, until I'm told otherwise, I don't see it relevant myself.
It's at the discretion of the chair, and so that's really your call, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
I mean, I think it raises an issue that's not privy to this discussion, so I don't see the need to include it in the record. That being not being notified about confusing information, I think, you know, in fact, the ACL in front of us does deal with two items, a fine for the discharge and a fine for the failure to submit timely reports, and those are the items that have been known for some time. So, you know, I think we can make our decision based upon what we have in front of us prior to today. All right. Board comments?
Yeah,
Mr. Hales.
If I can make a comment. For Mr. Payne, I appreciate the magnitude and the significance of this project and what the overall goal of this project is to do. And I understand that there's some difference of opinion whether it was 170 gallons or 25 gallons, 15 gallons. Even if we use the high number of 175 gallons, my math shows that that roughly translates to less than about a cubic yard of sediment. So in the big picture, that's not something that's not a lot of dirt. You know, that's less than 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet if we compress it and compact it all and spread over a gravel bar. Throwing that into the context of what the permit acknowledges is that there will be some disturbance on the site. Now, whether the contractor was truly following the BMPs, apparently this is a process that has happened many times in terms of pulling a pipe back and forth mm-hmm. and how drilling fluid is being conveyed for treatment and for appropriate discharge at the site. So following those guidelines, an accident happened and it was discharged to a gravel bar, not into the water. I'm torn on one half because I understand that in the big picture of things, that's not a lot of sediment. I do see it as potentially it could be causing an impact, as staff has indicated. It was not discharged directly to the water. So that's trying for me to digest the significance of the impact. I think everybody's in agreement that, yes, a discharge occurred. But I think the crux of the issue, the second, well, maybe the crux, but at least the second part of this issue is the permitting requirements were violated by late reporting. So I'm torn on one side. I am understanding that MCM was operating probably to the best of their ability, and this was an unfortunate incident. And I don't feel that they should be taking the brunt of the penalty for this. I feel that the permitting requirements were violated, and that's still something that should be considered. So,
if I could chime in here, this is your staff counsel, Samantha Olson. If the board members can keep clear, you have two violations, and whatever you decide today, these are discretionary penalties. It would be helpful if you decide the penalty for each one.
Mm-hmm.
Separately.
Correct.
Thank you.
So, to that point, are you wanting us to take separate votes? We have an order in front of us. You want that as one action? You want us to
make? I would like one action, but if you want to like settle on what to do with one violation first and then move to the other and then make a motion as a whole on what to do.
Mr. Massey?
Mr. Chair, it's pretty clear there's a violation. As Mr. Hale says, it's not a very big violation. In the scope of things, it's not an awful lot. I'm not sure what that is worth in dollars and cents. The second portion of it deals more with consistency on our part rather than the understanding that there's a letter from the Fish and Game, if that exists, that there's some confusion, et cetera. From our perspective, in terms of consistency, there's got to be an adherence to timely reporting, both verbal and written. And so, personally, I think there has to be a fine in there for that. The amount, I'm not sure about, but I would give you a motion that we uphold both components of it, and I would turn it to minds greater than mine to determine that amount, but that we uphold both those two specifics. If somebody can give me a number, I'd feel very happy.
One thing that, you know, the settlement offer to begin with, I think is maybe some place to start from. You know, the 10,000 and the 10,000. So, not making a motion toward one or the other, but at this time, but I think that's somewhere to start. Being that the violation of the lateness, they were willing to put up, but not for the other. So,
Mr. Corbett.
Let me try a stab. Why don't we do a straw vote on 10,000 for each violation? 10,000 for failure to report and 10,000 for violation of the discharge report, and see whether we could then put that in a motion.
Well, do that.
Well, for progressing this along, I'll state that as a motion.
I'll second it. We don't want to do a straw vote.
Is that a straw vote, or
no,
is that
a motion?
And I only had one comment on the violation, and we run into this in silvicultural operations and sediment all over the place. The standard has to be, or you place it where it will go into waters of the state, and that occurs in the private industry, deals with that in logging plans and all, and ranchers as well. And putting it in a stream bed is very calculated to end up in the discharged waters of the state. And that's certainly placing it in a place. So.
One thing I would like to make a comment on is commending the idea of having a person assigned to Caltrans on future projects. Is that, you know, putting the money up for that, hopefully that will help remedy future.
And I do appreciate you working on the slide.
My sense is the board is very close to taking an action, but before doing that, we have two teams of advisors. Do we have any comment from
just
either
to clarify
team?
You have one advisor each.
We have one advisor.
I know the enforcement team would, you know, they put on their case, but if you have questions for Dave Evans or I, we'd be your advisors.
We have two advisors, I guess.
I tend to agree from what I've seen. I believe that there's a responsibility for notification. You know, I believe that there was a discharge to the river bar, to the high bar, that will end up in the river when the levels of the water come back up. I think those are all facts of the matter. It just comes down to you know, the nature, extent, and gravity of the discharge upon which you need to base the amount of a fine, which is at your discretion.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Massey.
If we can get a message out as a result of this, I think it's that for those of you that have been here all morning long, we have been chastised over not taking seriously our charge as a board, so that everybody understands that we take that, and I think I can speak for all members of this board, we take that charge very, very seriously. We want to continue taking that, so that if there's a message that comes with this, it's follow the rules, do it right. Having a liaison person is just an exquisite idea and probably a salary well worth spent that will avoid this kind of problem in the future. That's what we want. Mm-hmm. Our job is to keep the waters clean. At one level, I absolutely laud having a way around Confusion Hill coming back and forth, but that's not our job. That's Caltrans' job. Ours is to keep the water clean and in that context, understand that if it comes to this board under these circumstances, we take it seriously. And so I would call for the question, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to say we take it very seriously also.
Yes.
On this project,
I understand that.
The project was set up to where we could drill 50 foundations for the temporary access across the river to build all the stuff in the peninsula. We're allowed to build roads all over the river bar, and we've been able to mitigate and not do that. We've been able to
Mr. Payne,
not disturb yes. the river bar. It's unbelievable the amount of effort that we've put forward to not cause water.
We appreciate that, and we've afforded you opportunity more than once to speak, and I leave it at that. Heidi, were you seeking comment?
No.
Do we have a motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I abstain.
One abstention. All right. Thank you, and appreciate it. The board has been in session since 9 this morning. My apologies to those arriving for a noted 1 o'clock. We're not going to get started at 1 o'clock. We are going to take a half-hour lunch break.
That was my guess. I didn't ask him. I'm like, it's going to go to 20.
Question, why did you bother?
It was more of a reflex, and as I ran into the sink, it was, you know, the question kept repeating.